Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Joining us today is a an author that we came across. He's written a lot of great books, and I think you'll love it. So joining us all the way from Spain is Olivier Bosman. Thank you for being on the phone.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm very pleased to be here.
So, it's the first time you've been on the show, so give a little bit of your history. How did you get into writing books?
Well, initially I wanted to write plays and screenplays. So that's the thing that attracted me the most, because I particularly love writing dialogue. And I did a degree, a master's degree in creative writing for film and television, and I pursued that as a career. I had an agent, and things went well for a while, but eventually nothing came of it. And, well, that's when I decided to change track. You know, there was no point keeping on at it if there was no result. So I thought, I discovered self-publishing, and I thought, well, that would be a great way to at least get my stories out to the general public. So, I decided to, what I really wanted to do was to tell stories, and whether they are in the form of a play or a screenplay, it didn't matter to me that much. So this seemed to be an avenue that might work. And so that's why I changed track and started writing novels.
Now, you tend to write mystery and mystery fiction, I guess it would be. What drew you to doing that kind of writing?
Well, I do mostly write mystery. It's something that kind of came about accidentally. The very first mystery that I wrote was a play. I decided to produce a play myself, to have a play on a. So I wrote Death Takes a Lover as a play. The thing that worked for me previously when I wrote screenplays was to take an established genre and give it my own twist. So when I decided to write a play, which I would stage myself, I thought about a genre that appeals to me. And I'd recently been reading The Woman in White and The Moonstone, two novels by Wilkie Collins, famous Victorian mystery writer. And I just thought a Victorian mystery, a moody gothic Victorian mystery, would just be perfect. So I wrote this play. In the play, there was a detective who tried to solve the mystery. And, the detective was just such a compelling character. I just thought, you know, this should be a series of mystery novels with this detective. And that's how it all started. And, well, I've now written five books. I've recently finished the sixth book in the series. And Well, people have taken to it. I enjoy writing, and yes, but it was by accident. It wasn't a deliberate thing.
Yeah. Do you know when you're writing? So this is Victorian mystery. Do you have to? You must have to do a lot of research to really make sure the specifics are right and the time era and all the details. How long does that take you to do?
Yeah, there is a lot of research that I did. I did a lot of research when I did my first book, The Ornamental Hermit. I did a lot of background research on how police procedures worked, the history of the detectives, the history of Scotland Yard. I did a lot of research there, which helped me with all the other books. So I do less and less research or at least less specific research as the series progresses. But yeah, mostly, you know, the good thing about writing on the computer is that you've got internet access. So whenever, you know, you need to look something up, you can just Google things. But yeah, there's a lot of constant research. I mean, usually I read one or two or three books before I even start writing the particular story that I want to write. Just to get some ideas. And then once I'm writing, I'm constantly researching stuff, yes.
Mm. Now, on this series that you're doing that starts with The Ornamental Hermit, now, this is about Detective Sergeant John. Now, and it's 1890, and it looks like he's got struggles in his own life, you know, and morphine addiction.
That's
stuff.
Right.
So, how did you create that character? Like, what do you draw from in order to create a person that's like this detective and he's morphine and all that? How do you get all the components and where do you draw it from?
Right, so it all started with the play that I mentioned, Death Takes a Lover. The play is about an event that happened in an isolated house in the Yorkshire Moors, and the detective is sent there to find out exactly what happened. And so the play revolves around the detective interviewing the members of the household, you know, the servants and the family of the household, and try to get to the bottom of what happened. But the detective had to have something going on himself. Otherwise, it would have been too boring. So I tried to think of some kind of struggle, some kind of internal struggle that he dealt with. And as the main theme of that play was sexual repression, I felt, you know, this had to be a detective who was himself sexually repressed. So I came up with the idea of making him a homosexual detective, but who was not comfortable with his sexuality and who tried to suppress his sexuality and then used morphine to suppress his sexuality. And that's where all these demons of this detective evolved. And that's what makes the detective so interesting and compelling to read about. And, as the series progresses, he slowly starts getting more comfortable with his own sexuality and, you know, with his struggles with morphine addiction. And I guess what readers enjoy about this series is to find out how this particular detective evolves gradually as the books progress.
Do you know people that personally that have some of these issues, like with the morphine, or they're hiding their sexuality? And do you draw from them, or is this just all happens in your mind, imagination?
Well, no. I mean, inevitably, when you're writing a character like that, a lot of my own personality does go into the character. I mean, he's a very complex character. I am not a morphine addict. I don't know anything really about morphine addiction. I've had to research that. But, you know, I am gay, and I have also had struggles. Well, not exactly struggles, but, you know, there's been, I guess most gay people would say that there have been periods when they were uncomfortable with their sexuality. So I've got that to draw on. But yeah, I mean, it's not just those issues that make this character complex. He's also very stubborn. He's also a bit introverted. He feels alienated because he feels like he doesn't really belong in the country that he lives, because he grew up in a different country and he doesn't really know where to fit in. And these are all just issues that I have. that I give to this character.
Right. So, well, you've traveled around. Well, you've traveled around
That's
a
right.
lot.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, correctly.
What makes you bounce around so much, just out of curiosity?
I don't know. I guess it's some kind of restlessness. It's just a desire to start all over again. You know, move to a different country, have a different set circle of friends, a different job, a different environment. But I think it's probably my genes, because I've inherited this from my mother and my grandmother, who both liked to move houses, or at least, you know, rearrange the furniture in their own house to make it, you know, to give their life a new kickstart. It's just some kind of innate recklessness that I have.
Yeah. Well, that certainly can add to the writing, right? The books and stuff. So that's...
Well, absolutely, yes.
You know, it's a good thing. Now, how do you ever decide, like, when you're doing these series of books, like, for instance, this one, is there an end to it, or do you keep coming back to it? How do you shape that?
Well, of course, I don't know. I'll keep on writing so long as I'm still interested by, so long as the character still interests me. I'll keep writing these books, so I don't have a particular number in mind. I do write other books in between, just to take a break. But so far, you know, I'm still interested. I'll continue writing this series, but I don't have an ending in mind. No, I have an ending in mind for each particular book, but not for the whole series. I mean, each book is a different mystery, and that mystery gets resolved at the end of that book. And then the next book will take place usually the next year, and it's a new mystery, but the internal struggles of the main character continue throughout, and I don't know how that's going to end. I don't have an end in mind for that yet, no.
Olivier, given the historical timescale that you've chosen for this particular series, was that a time that you've always been interested in, or was it a time that you could really sort of empathize with in terms of that sexual repression?
Well, I'm interested in history in general. I chose that time because, as I said, I was inspired to write a Victorian Gothic mystery a la Wilkie Collins, like the Woman in White and The Moonstone, which is set in the late Victorian period. Also, I think the late Victorian period is easier to write than mid or early Victorian period because it's more similar to modern times. Society hasn't changed that much, especially not in England, since the late Victorian era. The late Victorian era is really the beginning of the modern era, in that people were mostly urbanized, and you had the Industrial Revolution, and you had, new technologies, and also people's attitudes. More modern. So I do feel I have a bit of an affinity with the Victorian era, with the late Victorian era also, perhaps because of my upbringing in Colombia, where there's a big division between rich and poor,
mm-hmm.
Which there was in the Victorian era. And I also had, I grew up in a house, in a middle-class household with live-in maids, for instance. So I kind of understand that relationship between the rich and the poor, the way it existed in Victorian era. So I do feel I have that kind of affinity because of that.
Thank you. And do you feel that, because obviously you're taking this character, you've developed the character, you've had to look at them in the development of that character, you have to look at that as a multifaceted creation. So how do you have an affinity with him? Do you feel like you want to nurture him and protect him through this journey to get to a successful outcome? Or do you still feel at the moment that you really don't quite know what you want for him?
I do want him to. The last book in the series, when I've decided to write that one, I do know it's going to end up happily for him. But until then, he's going to have his ups and downs. because obviously you need that kind of drama in each book. But yes, I have, you know, I do care for that character. I have grown very fond of him.
And how do you write, because you're writing a long series of books, which, you know, people will be just chomping at the bit to get to the next one. And you said you write others in between.
Yes.
So how do you park that character when you finish the series? How are you going to leave that character and then be able to put all of that kind of that energy back into them, creating a new character? Will there still be that influence coming through from him, do you think?
Yes. I mean, his development is quite slow. It takes him a couple of books to start start feeling a bit more comfortable about his sexuality. But you know, that's how life works. You change gradually as you get older, and each book is set after the previous one. So I mean, he's getting older as the books continue, and he's in his early 30s now. And I'm in my late 40s, so, you know, I can see more or less how I have changed, so will he change? So I can use my own life experience to guide his development. It's not difficult to get back into him at all. I mean, I think I know him very well. And as I said, I can use my own life experience, my own feelings, my own thoughts and emotions, and give them to him. It's not difficult at all to get back into his
state. Do you think it would be hard to leave him when you're then starting to invest in a new series? And will that be hard to leave that character that you've invested so heavily in?
I think it probably will be. Although, you know, I might have a new character in a different series. I don't know. But I don't know. I have no intentions of leaving him just yet. I think I'll probably keep on writing him all along. But what I am doing is I am changing the tone a little bit. So this new book that I've recently finished and that I'm going to be publishing this summer, it's also it also has him as protagonist. But things have changed a little. I don't want to say how, because that kind of gives it away a little.
Absolutely.
But things have changed for him, and he's going in a different direction. And so for people who have been following the series, this would be the next one in the series. But I'm also calling it a spin-off series. So it's the beginning of a new series where there's a slight change of direction in the tone and in the kind of story that I'm telling. But it still has him as a protagonist. But that's one way to kind of breathe new life into the series.
It's when we talked to various authors about their writings and how they write, it usually gives some inspiration to others who are just kind of stepping into the world of writing, and we sometimes explore how people manage to keep focused and if they've got any particular activities or places they like to write. And we were doing that on interviews yesterday. Is that something that you need to do? Do you need to go somewhere else to write? Do you write at home? Is there any particular environment that you flourish better in?
I write at home. You know, because as I said, I do a lot of research while I write. It's just suddenly an idea occurs to me while I'm writing, and then I feel like I need to find out a bit more about that. So it's useful to have the internet there for me to look into it. But sometimes I feel like I don't want to write at the computer. It's too distracting. Sometimes I just take a pen and a paper, and I go somewhere.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So if I go out into the patio, or I sit on my windowsill, or I'd go to a restaurant or a cafe and sit at a table and just write on pen and paper, and sometimes I just get more writing done that way. And sometimes the computer and researching things is just too distracting. It just takes me away from my work.
We were laughing and making fun yesterday in an interview of Al, because Al, when he comes to finish a book, he goes away and stays in a hotel to finish it. And we believe this is just an excuse, and many authors don't act in that way. And you're kind of just proving my point, really, that Al just goes off for a jolly in a hotel.
It's a holiday. It's a holiday. You know.
Well, it's a way to celebrate as well, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I just can't do the work at home. There's too much going on with dogs and all the stuff going on at home. So I find it very difficult to stay focused on what I'm doing.
Right. Yes.
So I
do understand that, because sometimes when I can't focus, I just pick up a. As I said, I take a pen and paper and I just go somewhere else. Also, I find I can do better work when I am on holiday. There's a lot of waiting around in airports and stuff like that. I just pick up my paper and I do some writing, and I often get more writing done that way. And the change of scenery also does help. I always take some writing with me when I am going on holiday, and I do find that it does help to just have a change of view, change of scenery, change of feel.
You're being far too kind to Al here now.
No, it's true. There's a whole change of atmosphere. Like, you're in a place with a lot of people you don't know. You're going about your life in a different atmosphere.
Absolutely, I understand that. Yes, it's a luxury, though. It's a luxury, but.
It's quite a diva, Olivier. you have no idea.
No, it's not true, but I can see some sense in it. That is.
Yeah, well, it works for me. That's when I get most of my done, right? I mean, you know, hey. Speaking of that, too, do you have, like with this COVID-19 and the whole atmosphere of the world right now, I know that with some writers, they're saying that it's, dark and they can't write, and then others are doing fine. Has it affect you in your writing? Does it make you maybe have a little more dark feelings when you write, or can you write at all?
It hasn't really affected me with regards to the feeling. when at its peak, or when it sort of, you know, started to go really badly here in Spain and we went into lockdown, I was very distracted. It was on the news and I kept checking the news all the time. I couldn't think about anything else because it's such a sensationalist story, this whole coronavirus crisis. It's so yeah, I kept checking the news and I couldn't concentrate, and that lasted for about a week. But then I just decided, right, I need to get on with my work, so I just stopped watching the news. Just don't watch it, or watch it only once or twice, you know, in the morning and in the evening. But I don't need to be kept up to date every five minutes. And well, we're a few months on now from when we first started the lockdown, so I've kind of gotten used to it now. So it's less sensationalistic now. And apart from that, you know, I work from home anyway. I teach English online from home, so it hasn't affected my life that much. I can still, you know, throughout this whole lockdown, I was still able to take the dog out for a walk three times a day. So it hasn't changed my life that much. It's just the news. Just switch off the news, and then that dog helps cope in shape.
Yeah. No, I was just wondering if it made you, if it put like a dark shadow over your feelings and maybe some worry, and that makes a difference in how you write.
Yeah, yeah. I know what you mean, but no, it didn't really affect me in that way, no.
Hmm. Interesting. Now, so what does influence you? What do you grab on and take in? And it helps create some sort of thing in your book.
Well, the great thing about writing mystery books is really that you can write about any topic, and you just need to introduce some mystery into it in the plot. Like, for instance, this new book that I've just finished, the new Billings mystery. I was interested in the occult. It was a very big thing in the late Victorian era. There were a lot of esoteric societies, people writing esoteric books and looking for hidden meaning in the ancient texts. And there was a lot of spiritualism and hypnotism and this kind of things that they were very big in the Victorian era. And this was something that really interested me, and I did a lot of research about that, and I built a whole story, a whole mystery around that. In a previous book, it's all about anarchists. Anarchism was also very big in the late Victorian era, and anarchist terrorists. And that caught my interest at the time. So I built a whole plot around that. So whatever interests me at that time, I can turn it into a mystery novel for my detective.
So with that, what have you had personal experiences in the paranormal or in that area? Has that kind of affected your own life?
No, not really. I haven't had. Interesting. I'm not sure whether I believe it, but I'm interested in it. I'm interested in things like Kabbalah and Christian mysticism. These are people who are reading the ancient texts, trying to find hidden messages as to what heaven looked like and what God's appearance is like. And people who actually believe in magic, like Aleister Crowley, which is the novel, or the I'm reading a biography about Aleister Crowley right now, which has influenced my current work in progress. It's just something. I'm not interested because I have any paranormal experiences myself. I just find it interesting in an intellectual capacity. I'm not sure I actually believe any of it. But
what do you think of Aleister Crowley then? What do you think of something someone like that?
Well, he was he led an amazing life. I didn't know that much about him when I started reading the biography. He's had an amazing life, and he's he wasn't a pleasant man. Obviously, he wasn't a very good man. But I guess what interests me about it is that it's a way of escaping. It's an escapism. It's a way of escaping his own life, and it's a way of justifying his darkest fantasies. So he used magic as a way to indulge in the things that he wanted to indulge in, and he said, you know, he's doing it for the sake of magic, or for the sake of creating magic, or discovering magic, when really it was just him wanting to do those things. He was a very unpleasant man, but there is something that can be said for his philosophy. He believes that you should just discover what your true will is and act upon it. And if everybody did that, there wouldn't be any conflicts, because most conflicts arise from people not being able to do what deep inside they want to do. So there is some gravitas to his philosophy, but mostly I think he was just narcissistic, a complete narcissist, and an unpleasant character, but a very interesting character. And the villain in my latest work in progress was very heavily influenced by him. So he served as great inspiration for that particular book.
So we've spoken quite a lot about little bits of each of your books as your character goes through his journey, and your influences, and where how you've incorporated your influences into your works. But I'm just very aware, I think, Olivier, that some of our listeners won't have been able to pick up one of your books as yet. And as you rightly identify, that the first book is the one that's going to really support and them to understand where this character has come from, and then they're able to follow him on the journey. So for our listeners, are you able to tell us a little bit about the storyline, without giving too much away, of course, about that first book, and why it will grip them?
Okay, well, so the first book is called The Ornamental Hermit, and the main character is Detective Sergeant John Billings from Scotland Yard, and he's been assigned a case of the murder of Lord Palmer. Lord Palmer is an aristocrat who lives in a large estate, and on his estate he had an ornamental hermit, which is something that aristocratic people used to have in the past. They used to build follies of old Norman castles or ruins of a Roman villa, just to make it look like they lived on an ancient piece of land. And they would also have a grotto and an ornamental hermit, so they'd employ somebody who lived as a hermit in their estate, just for aesthetic reasons.
Right.
So this man gets murdered, and they believe that the ornamental hermit who lived in his estate murdered him. But Detective John Billings thinks that he's been scapegoated, and he's trying to find out who the real culprit was. And then at the same time, he's also got another case that he's working on, a personal case about his foster mother comes to him and wants him to find out what happened to her son, his foster brother, who disappeared 10 years ago. So he's trying to solve two mysteries at the same time. And those are the two mysteries which gradually unravel in this book. And, well, this is the first book. So this is the book where you get to know John Billings. You get to know his past, and you get to know his the demons that he struggles with, his loneliness, his inability to cope with his sexuality, his addiction to morphine, all that is explained and brought up in that first book.
And what sort of age group of people would you see this book being I don't know how to word it really, but of interest? To what sort of age group would be most interested in this type of book, do you think?
Oh, I'd say anything from 30s upwards, I guess. If I look at the people who read my book, they're in the age group, 30 upwards, I guess. But I mean, you know, anybody who's interested in Victorian mysteries. People who like books set in the past tend to be older, I guess.
Mm.
Younger people prefer contemporary books.
What's next for you going forward? What's your next project look like? Is it a next set of books? What does that look like?
Right. My next book is coming out this summer. It's called A Glimpse of Heaven, and it's also a book with the same detective, John Billings, but this is the one that's taking a slightly different direction.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say too much because that would give away what happened in the other books.
Yeah.
This is the one about the supernatural, that the occult, the one that's influenced by Aleister Crowley. I also have another book, completely unrelated to this, but they are also mysteries. They are noir mysteries. It's an anthology of three noir novellas, and I'm interested in writing another series of novellas and publish another book of noir mysteries. I like to do things in between something different in between the different books. So I'm thinking of doing some noir.
And if there was a book or a plot of a new book that you desperately would like to do but haven't quite built the confidence to do yet, what would that be about?
I have been thinking about doing something like science fiction. That kind of interests me, but I don't have the confidence to do that. It's just too far. I've gotten used to writing mysteries, but maybe a science fiction kind of mystery.
Sounds good.
A mystery set in the future, set in a different planet or something like that. Something a bit with a bit more fantasy, but I don't know if I'm the person to write it.
Murder mystery on Mars.
Something like that. You need to know a lot about science, and I think I'll just stick to writing about the past, but maybe a different era.
Well, the way of the world right now, you don't really need to have science. You can just make it up.
Yeah, you got to make it up, but it's probably some kind of scientific background to it to make it believable. Otherwise, it would just be complete fantasy.
Let's give out. So, what's your information? So now, if people are interested and they want to follow up, what's your website and contact info for them?
Right, so my website is oliverbosman.com, so just my name.com, and there's all my books are there with buy links. You can also look me up on Amazon. All my books are available on Amazon and also on Kindle Unlimited. You can also look me up on Facebook or Twitter. My name is my handle. You just type in my name and you'll probably find me.
There you go. Well, fantastic. So now we're going to have you up on our website as well, so listeners can just do one click and find your website and all of your great books. Yeah.
Okay.
So our guest has been on the phone all the way from Spain and during this tough time. Great books, and check them out. It's Olivier Bosman. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end! By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.